You paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch, the Wednesday edition. 12 minutes, make that 10 minutes after 12 on this Wednesday afternoon. Louis Lazar is in the studio. He writes for the Chicago Business Journal and stops by from time to time. Louis, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you.
Okay, so you write about, you know, advertising, things like that, sports sometimes, but a lot about the airline business. And I read a piece from you a couple of weeks ago that really sort of primed the pump for me when it comes to the Olympics. You wrote a piece on the United Airlines commercial that was going to, which is a great commercial, isn't it?
It's been airing a lot during these. They didn't air it till the Olympics started, but now you're seeing it a lot the last 10 days.
And they work in the different sports and all of that, and the two teams, one goal or something like that.
Right.
I remember. But United, I mean, they're making a big deal of this Olympic partnership.
Right, because they've been in the business of ferrying these Olympic athletes around for over 35 years, so they really thought this is a good year since it's a landmark year for the Olympics, the first time in South America. I think they really are beating the drums even louder than they have in years past.
How are they doing? They just had a labor agreement, right, with their flight attendants?
Well, they had a big, that was a big positive for the new CEO, Oscar Munoz. Because it was very iffy. They weren't sure whether they were going to get a deal with the flight attendants because they were trying to merge two groups, the old Continental Airlines and the United, into one seamless group. And they finally went with the contract that was presented to them. And so that's a big plus for labor relations.
I think 24,000 flight attendants.
24,000 plus.
53% approval.
Correct.
Is that, I don't know what's typical. Do you know what's typical for?
Well, I mean, if it's a contract everybody loves, you could get up to 80 or 90%. So there was still a lot of divergence about how they saw the contract. A lot of issues about the pension. Some people were getting a pension. Some were getting a 401k. But they finally decided it was better because the labor leaders sent out, the heads of the flight attendant union sent out a memo just before the vote closed saying, look, if you don't go with this deal now, the likelihood of us going back to the bargaining table and getting something just as good is slim to nil. So I think a lot of people bought into that argument.
Oscar Munoz is a name when it comes to CEOs that you hear more than most. Is he outside the regular mold?
Well, he's outside the regular mold in one sense, in the sense that he's never run an airline before. He was on the board of directors of United for 10
years. And he's had a heart transplant. That's outside the regular mold.
And he's had that. That's a heart transplant, a heart attack. Yeah, he's had a pretty bad medical
situation. But he seems to, his workers seem to like him.
They do because he's been. That was the first thing he did when he was named CEO. I mean, he started outreach to the employees. He knew they were all up in arms about the previous manager, so he's been very proactive in being more friendly, shall we say, towards them.
And they're going to be more friendly, right, to overseas passengers as well. Tell me about this Polaris.
Well, they're really making a big deal about that, which you haven't seen a lot with premium cabin work before. Most people just sort of unveil a few bells and whistles and leave it at that. But they're really starting several months out with a big ad campaign to announce the arrival in December of this whole new reimagined business class.
This business class for overseas travel?
Correct.
With the big old fancy hot dishes?
Well, there are lots of things. I mean, I saw a little preview of all the little bells and whistles, but I mean, until you see it all together on the plane, you just never know.
But they're making a huge deal of the food, though.
They are. They spent a lot of time in the test kitchens coming up with new things, and all these Charlie Trotter project chefs got involved. And because they're the ones sort of out there talking to customers right and left in restaurants, so they helped them come up with some of the dishes.
You cover the airlines. Do people choose their airline by the food that's served on it? I mean, do you think it will have an impact?
Well, you tend to think people sort of dismiss the food, but in the premium cabin where they're paying the big tickets, I mean, people do actually care a lot about what they're being served, and they get a lot of feedback from those customers. So, yeah, it is a big deal. And in the back of the bus, not so much, because it's not really what the people are there.
Well, thank you for telling me what it's like in the front of the bus, Louis, because I had no idea.
I've been that often.
Until you started explaining to me. Louis Lazar is here. He writes for the Chicago Business Journal. And let's jump to Southwest, right? Midway's their biggest hub.
Correct.
And tell me if I'm wrong, but they're one of those airlines who they don't really share with other airlines, right? You can't, and there's a movement away from that?
Well, they are, because like every other airline, they're looking for new revenue channels, and this is something they had been in, like a little airline to themselves. They could never send passengers to other carriers, and other carriers wouldn't send passengers.
Right.
To
they're trying
to soften up their rank and file employees to getting the idea. Well, maybe if we cut deals with other airlines, we can get some of that revenue when there's a disruption at an American Airlines or United or something like that. So they're definitely in the market to explore that.
So if your American flight is canceled, you might say, hey, can you put me on the United, right?
And that's the way it's been working.
Now,
yeah,
right.
They can do that very easily
now.
But
you
would never do Southwest previous. But if they get into this code-sharing mode, that could happen pretty quickly.
But there's resistance in the workforce for that?
Yeah, well, there's resistance because there's resistance to management in general at Southwest, which is something that's very unusual in a 45-year history of that airline. They've never had big labor problems. But Gary Kelly has not been able to cut new contracts with three key labor unions, and this has gone on for years, and these labor unions have had enough, and they're sort of pushing for a regime change because they don't know that Gary can get the job done.
All right, let's go shopping. You're the guy who told me about the store, the Untuck store.
The Untuck.
Right. So two things, two sort of a tale of two cities or stores. Sephora is opening up a glam shop just north of us on Michigan mm-hmm. Avenue. And Macy's is announcing big changes down, well, in general, and maybe on State Street.
Oh, I think, yeah, you got to keep an eye on State Street. I mean, that's been the iconic retail outlet in Chicago for decades, centuries almost. And, I mean, I think with Macy's announcing they're closing, you know, large numbers of stores, the State Street store is going to be under the gun.
So they had talked about making changes there even before the closures were announced, right?
They talked about, sort of making it more of a mixed-use building, because it's a huge building, right. Obviously, and I think they realize they don't need that much space for retail, but how much of it will end up being used for office or condos or stuff like that, and what will be left of the Macy's? It's obviously going to be, if it all comes to pass, it's not going to be the Macy's people used to walk in and see with the soaring roofs and
right.
ceilings and all this stuff. It could be a much more compact, but potentially more interesting. I mean, I think that's the problem. The sort of the layout of the place is gotten rather boring.
Or stayed, right?
Stayed,
we know
yeah.
it's there. But there probably will be Macy's in the area that close.
Oh, certainly, yeah. It's just a question. I mean, they'll obviously hit the ones that are least productive first. I'm not sure how that looks on some of the outlying suburban locations will
right.
probably get hit.
All right, so stayed Macy's to very vibrant Sephora, right?
Right. They're very on the much want to be on the scene as a cutting edge. You know, they're doing it. It's more like a campus for cosmetics. You've got classes,
well,
interactive.
We were talking off the air about the fact, you know, now you have to find a way to get people into the stores, right? 50 years ago at Macy's, it was decorating the windows. 21st century, it's iPads.
iPads, LED screens, all sort of interactive, this and that. But they want to give you something else besides just making a purchase when you go in. And that's, I think, the main idea with what they're doing with Sephora.
And they're opening 600 block of North Michigan.
605 North Michigan.
Later this month?
August 26th, I think. It may be the 24th, but definitely by the 26th it'll be out.
So something to do on Labor Day.
Exactly.
Louis Lazar.
They still got the construction windows, so you can't really look in yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Read more from Lewis at bizjournals.com.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in. Good to see you. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. My name is Steve Bertrand. Say hello to Andy Smith, the Executive Vice President of the Mutual Fund Store. Andy, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm good. It's nice to talk. It's always nice to talk to you. It's nice to talk to Lewis, who was on before, so this is a good day. I want to talk about saving for college while at the same time trying to maintain some sort of strategy for your retirement. But before we do that, we've had a few calls this week about people who've got documents, you know, old
okay.
documents, and they wonder how long they should save them. Is there a rule of thumb for that?
Not really. I mean, I know that tax documents are a little bit different. So, you know, you have this kind of prepared group of information. So you've got that. It's a smaller file. I usually tell people to keep that for about 6-7 years. And usually it's not all that difficult to do that. The problem a lot of times comes from when people have, you know, 401ks or IRAs, different investment accounts, bank accounts. And so they get all these statements
right.
each and every month. I usually tell people, you know, keep all the quarterly statements until you get the yearly statement. and then kind of shred the quarterly statements, and then just keep the yearly statements going forward. So it's a little bit of it's a little difficult to kind of establish that process at the beginning, and so you're going to kind of have a collapsing or a growing folder or a decreasing folder depending upon, you know, where you are in the year. Keep the monthlies until you get the quarterlies. Keep the quarterlies until you get the yearlies, and then going forward, you should just have the yearlies. But about 6-7 years should be fine.
Okay, so I got one in college. I got another one going next week. In fact, I'm going to take my son.
Oh, that's awesome! Congratulations.
We'll be driving right by Indy. We're going to go down to Oxford, Ohio. So, you know, we talk about saving for retirement and then putting away money to the kids' college fund and all of that. And usually one has to give for the other. And I think a lot of people say, well, we'll save for retirement after the kids are in college. And
right.
That's kind of a dangerous strategy, isn't it?
It is. And hopefully the things that I say aren't going to run counter to what you guys have done. I mean, it's awesome that you're in the position that you are to be able to do that for your kids.
So you're saying you're going to try not to call me a fool on here.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of apologizing
before okay.
I say it. But this is hard because people know that they need to save for their retirement. They know that they're going to be living decades in retirement. They have to plan for the future. But on the other side, they know that they want to give their children a real opportunity, sometimes an opportunity that they themselves didn't have growing up. So I tell people, no matter what you think, you have to do both at the same time. So if you're saving 10% of your, you know, take-home pay or even 10% of your gross pay, you have to split the percentages always between retirement and education. But then I also tell people, look, don't forget that not just one person is going to be paying for education. You kind of think of it as 25% each. You're going to pay a little bit. The child's going to pay a little bit. Hopefully there's going to be some scholarships, and then, you know, there may be some student debt involved.
Right.
So often before that, though, people just thought either, you know, one person's going to pay for it, or it's all scholarships, or it's all student debt. That's really not the case.
The way I look at it in a way is that the debt, not just the debt, but the cost, I should say, is almost so insurmountable that it's okay to sacrifice what you would be putting away for your retirement too, because in the end, that's not going to make a huge debt on what you're going to have to pay for college when the bills come.
Yeah, and I think what happens is, no matter what you think is going to happen, you're always surprised
right.
as to what happens on the other side. And that goes for retirement, that goes for buying your first house, that goes for saving for education. I mean, if you can basically build a plan that absolutely sets you up for the worst possible scenarios across the board, and if you can make it work in those scenarios, I mean, we do this when we meet with clients. I've got a lot of younger clients, and so they absolutely are trying to build in their education costs into their long-term plans. So just like we look at Social Security or healthcare or estate planning for some of the older clients, for the younger ones, we're building these education costs in. And if we can make those plans work at the very beginning, then they're going to feel a lot more comfortable as the child continues to age.
We just have about a half a minute left. But, you know, the other thing is that a lot of times you put money in a fund, whether it's one of those college savings funds or whatever, and then kind of forget about it. Do you help people manage? Because you got to manage that too, don't you?
There's a lot. You have to always know that there's a lot of different things in a lot of different places. The Illinois 529 is a great option for people in a lot of different situations. But if you do have things in different places, you got to be mindful to remember all the stuff that you got to look at each quarter.
Andy Smith from the Mutual Fund Store. How do people find out more information?
It's pretty easy. MutualFundStore.com. We've got 3 Chicagoland offices, 847-498-3636 to talk to one of the advisors. But you can learn a lot more at MutualFundStore.com.
You always make it simple and easy to understand, Andy. Thanks very much.
All right, buddy. Good luck this weekend.
We'll talk soon. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Frank Sennett joins us now from Crane Chicago Business. He is in the Montana Bureau this afternoon. Frank, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. How are you?
So, fella, you go on vacation to the beautiful Montana, big sky country, and you're still joining us on the Business Lunch.
Wouldn't miss it.
That's very nice. Are you in the mountains?
We are in Missoula, western part of the state, college town, where I grew up, surrounded by mountains.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, we're going to talk donuts in a minute, but let's talk school since you brought up Missoula. I just was talking to Andy Smith from the Mutual Fund Store about saving for college, and a lot of one of the important things people look for is the value of a college. Is it worth the money I'm putting down? Greg Hines in Cranes writes about this study of Third Way, which is an interesting group in itself. I was looking at them earlier, but they sort of crunch the numbers and find that in some cases, the more expensive schools are the better value because you get more money in scholarships from them.
Yeah, so if you can swing it where you don't have to pay the full boat, whether you get financial aid or, as you say, scholarships, this Third Way nonpartisan study says that some of the bigger state schools, the more expensive state schools like University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, UIC, will give you a more bang for your buck in terms of the students graduating and being able to get into decent paying careers.
So they look at, I didn't know, but there are 535 public schools in the country, and out of those, U of I ranks 22nd when it comes to value by this particular measure, which is pretty good. UIC is not too far behind at 45th, and that's kind of a surprise to me.
Yeah, so Illinois ranking very high with those schools, and then even Illinois State and U of I at Springfield, also ranked in the top portion, Illinois State at 66, U of I Springfield at 115.
Western, Northern, Eastern, they all are in the on the plus side. Southern Illinois, Edwardsville as well, is 215th to 229th. That's where those schools fall. SIU, not quite as good at 339. Northeastern Illinois, I was surprised, did not score well at all when it comes to this.
Yeah, I mean, I've known a lot of people have gone to NIU over the years. Obviously, a very popular school for Chicago area students. But what this study has found is that NIU, Chicago State, may not give you that bang for the buck in terms of the value. Where you get what you pay for a little bit. They have a much harder time getting their investment to pay off students who go to these schools, according to the study.
Well, check that out. It's at Third Way is the organization that put it together. Kind of cool. All right, I'm going to be off a couple days next week because I'm taking my son to school, but I think it's on Thursday that some of the people from Krispy Kreme are coming in, so my timing is way off. Krispy Kreme is coming back to Chicago. What's that about?
Yeah, so they are going to open 8 Cook County shops. The first one is going to be in November in the south suburbs of Homewood, which also has, they've got the good ice cream shop down at Homewood Flossmoor, and they're getting an embarrassment of riches down there for treats. And it's the first announced expansion. They first announced it in June of 2015, and they're finally making it happen.
Well, I can't think of an opening or an entry into a market that was more widely welcomed than Krispy Kreme was back, in 2008, 2009? I mean, people couldn't stop talking about it, and then all of a sudden it looked like there was a Krispy Kreme on every corner, and then they disappeared. Yeah. What happened?
Well, it was back actually in 98. They had its first metro area stores. And this happened all across the country. I remember when it opened in Chicago, and then I was in Washington State for a while after that. It rolled out big coast to coast, and then it just kind of pulled back because of the recession. They tightened their belt. And in the Chicago area, they did maintain a bakery in Elk Grove Village. So you would see, the Krispy Kremes on the store shelves at the grocery when you would go, and maybe tempt you right there. But in terms of the stores, they've been out of the market for quite some time.
I know they ran into some trouble during the down period, but it seems like they might have reached a little too far, a little too fast. Have they learned from that experience?
Yeah, super fast expansion. They still have 1,000 stores in 27 countries. They're working now, in this case, with a franchisee, Chicagoland Restaurants, a venture backed by two Miami businessmen. So I think when you're looking at the franchise model versus the company-owned, it's a little easier to protect yourself as a company.
All right, so Krispy Kreme coming back to the shops around here. And like I said, they will be here to talk more about this on the Business Lunch next Thursday afternoon. Let's talk manufacturing, because that's the big thing, right? No one makes anything in the U.S. anymore. We get news out of Melrose Park today that this medical manufacturing company is going to have a big expansion there. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Ryan Ori has a great story at ChicagoBusiness.com about German drug maker Fresenius Kabi.
Right? Did you notice how I made you say it?
I know. I was working for for you to go into that water, but I'm happy to.
We'll say Fresenius Kabi, probably. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They're planning a $250 million expansion of its Melrose Park facility, and what they do is they produce injectable drugs for uses for people with need anesthesia, pain management, cancer treatment, and eliminating infections. So kind of a broad range of injectable drugs. And they are going to, they already employ more than 1,500 people in Illinois, including more than 500 in the Melrose Park plant. And this is going to be a really huge expansion for them.
I know their local or the U.S. headquarters are in Lake Zurich, too, so not so far away. But, right, and if you're a town like Melrose Park, this is nice. This money's nice. It means not just increased tax revenue, but it means good jobs in the area.
Exactly. As long as the company spends at least $80 million on the expansion, Melrose Park is going to contribute $15 million in tax increment financing subsidies because they want these good jobs in the community. These people are going to buy houses. They're going to, spend in the community, and hopefully it'll be a very nice thing for Melrose Park.
Well, that's good news. Let's go to Hoffman Estates, where the corporate park news is not quite as good, right? There, that's where the old AT&T campus was. I say old.
Yeah, there's
I think
some winners and losers here, right?
They moved out of there a couple of years ago, but just now stopped paying rent, correct?
Yeah, so Hoffman Estates is seeing the other side of that coin of the large corporate presence. AT&T's former corporate campus in Hoffman Estates is now $116 million in debt,
wow.
And it is facing foreclosure just days after the end of its lease. This is whereas Melrose Park is smiling, the folks in Hoffman Estates not so happy right now. It's a $1.6 million square foot office property, and it is empty right now.
And they've got to figure out a way to fill it, or at least a way to use part of it.
Yeah, so the village's director of economic development says we're pretty much open to anything. There's some chatter out there as far as redevelopment, but nothing too serious, he says. Know that one big office tenant at this point is unlikely to lease the entire property. So they want to see redevelopment. But as we've seen in so many cases, that could take several years.
Well, I've got an idea. You can read more about the story at ChicagoBusiness.com. Frank Sennett from Cranes joining us from Montana on his vacation. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. Have some beans on me and have a great rest of your vacation.
Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, so what do you do if you are entering your senior year, let's say Loyola Marymount, and you're going to have to find a job next year to enter the work world? Here's an idea. Why don't you just create your own business? That's what Carly Callens did. Carly, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you. Good morning.
This is all about Snapchat, right?
It is, yeah.
And tell people, first of all, I mean, I think we're mostly familiar with Snapchat, but the idea of these filters that you can create to sort of publicize your own business.
Yeah, absolutely. So Snapchat is a way to share photos and pictures, and they disappear within 10 seconds. But these filters are a way to share where you're at and what you're doing.
So filters, when I think of filters first, you think of something on your iPhone to change a picture you've taken. This isn't quite that.
So it's similar. It's where you can add a logo or like a location spot of where you're at. And it just, you just kind of the same idea where you just can swipe and you can see different pictures on top of your picture. It's the same idea as a normal filter.
All right, so I got a little ahead of myself. You are going back for your senior year.
I am.
Where did this idea for a business come from?
I just wanted to do something different for the summer. I wanted, I didn't want to work for someone else, and I thought that Snapchat has been taking off, and I just wanted to do something with that.
10 billion views a day. Most of them are millennials, right?
Yeah, I think 77% of the Snapchat user base is millennials.
But maybe 12% are people like me.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm on Snapchat, so but I'm just a receiver, pretty much. I have it to see what my kids are up to.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got 10 billion people. So you got a lot of eyes on this. The thing is, it goes away pretty quickly. But let's say you own a bar or a restaurant, or you're having even a wedding, right? An individual event, they could come to you and you create a filter for them. How does it work?
Yeah, I create a personalized filter for them with any logo or any words or anything they want on it. And then I personally put it up on Snapchat, so they have to do nothing with the technology aspect. And I just put it up for them, and anyone in the area can use that filter and send it to all of their friends.
So I'm in the bar or in the restaurant, and I'm saying, you know, I take a picture of my food, like, oh, this is great. And then I would add the filter of Bob's Restaurant over that.
Absolutely. So then you add Bob's Restaurant, and then you send it to all of your friends. And all of your friends would say, this is where he's at, and this is what he's doing, and he's enjoying his food.
What's in it for Bob?
Bob gets all the viewers, so he gets endorsement from anyone who's snapping. It's using the Snapchat filter, and he gets thousands of eyes for a very cheap price.
Right. So, and then he has a member of his customer base sending it out to other members of potentially his customer base, right? I mean, if someone's in there taking a picture of their food, clearly they are one of the customers he's after.
Right.
And now they share with all these other people who share the same demographics or similar.
Absolutely, yep.
Men more than women on Snapchat?
Women.
Yeah? Why do you think that is?
You know, I'm not sure exactly. I don't know.
Okay, so let's go back to Bob. Bob decides that he wants to do this. And he can send you, like, graphics of his... A picture of his restaurant, or how does it work?
So, like, generally a logo or his name or the address or something of that sort, so people can identify the restaurant.
And is there a price differentiation? I mean, is there one price? Or you mentioned a difference in geography, and I'm not sure I understood that.
Yeah, so the price is based on how long you want the filter to be active for and then how big of an area you want it to cover. So if you wanted to cover the whole block your restaurant's on, it's going to cost a little more than just to cover the actual area of the restaurant.
I see. Okay, so... And if you wanted it to go across the whole wide world?
You can do up to 1 million square feet, I believe. So not the whole wide world. But
how does that work?
So I go through Snapchat and I create the filters, and then I choose the location, or the person chooses the location, and then I uploaded it. So anyone in that area can see it.
Okay. And again, then what we're looking for is sort of an instantaneous sort of boost.
Absolutely.
In a way. So you can do it for private affairs as well, weddings and things like that?
Anything.
And so people are doing Snapchat stories about the wedding they were at or something like that?
Yeah.
How's business?
Business is good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it what you expected?
Yeah. I mean, it's been fun. I've been able to kind of work on my own time and try to figure out how the whole business world works. And
so you're going to go back to school?
I am.
Are you still going to have time to do this?
Absolutely.
How do people find out more information?
They can go to SnapchatWizard.com.
SnapchatWizard.com. Carly Callens is the entrepreneur major at Loyola Marymount. Well, I wish you continued success. Obviously, you're well on your way.
Thank you.
Maybe you'll hire me one day.
Absolutely.
Promise?
Yep.
Write it down. Write it down right here.
I got it.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.